Off goes into a podiatrist's office.
Yeah? What happened?
God, I love that they uploaded that. I don't know if you went on Conan's page. They uploaded a bunch of Norm clips.
There's been Norm clips going all around the internet. The great Norm MacDonald passed away. And, as someone who always liked him, I kind of feel like, who are these fair weather friends who were like, oh, what a genius? It's like, well, I always thought he was a genius. I was always a fan of his.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's going to happen. Like, he's just one of those guys where, like, the second he died, it was like everyone's going to come out of the woodwork.
I mean, he tanked a roast performance on purpose. That roast performances are some of the most high-pressure things for a comedian, and he tanked his on purpose. It's incredible. Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, that was the Bob Saget roast, right?
Where he it was incredible. Bob Saget, the director of Dirty Work.
Yeah. He's like, you've got the hair of a pigeon, the eyes of an eagle. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is for the birds. He would just tell, like, hacky.
Like, terrible jokes. My wife is a real battle axe. I was looking in the mirror, and I said, honey, when I look in the mirror, all I see is a fat, ugly old man. And I need you to pay me a compliment. Said, well, you got perfect eyesight. I said, you dirty dog.
I love even like the setup to the moth joke where he talks about like getting the joke from his driver. He's like, nah, I mean, what? Why do you hear me do it? Like
the moth joke. Everyone, if go and look up Norm MacDonald moth joke. You might have heard it before, but nobody does it as good as Norm.
And it's interesting to see everyone come out of the woodwork and be like, yeah, go look up the moth joke.
He was maybe one of the best talk show guests ever. He's up there with like Richard Lewis. You know what I mean? Like, he is.
Did you hear there was a clip going around that where he talked about he wanted to be one of the last comics to be like anointed by Johnny Carson.
Right. And they gave him Jay.
Yeah. Like the booker of the Tonight Show was like watching him, and like Jay Leno would host Mondays at that point, and they'd be like, you're more of a Jay comic. He's like, well, my friends tell me I'm a Johnny comic.
They say that all the time.
It's like, no, you're more of a Jay guy. It's like, what kind of compliment's that?
Right. Sounds terrible. on Netflix, a lot of his stuff is trending, and I rewatched his last special, Hitler's Dog, Gossip and Trickery, which is an incredible hour of stand-up.
Yeah.
Anyway, Norm is not the topic of this episode, sadly. We have a very fun topic today. And hey, you're listening to PCMC, so welcome. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here all the time. But I'm here with my good friend and your good friend, Mr. Vin Forte.
Hey, what's going on?
Vin, the co-host of Wrestle Rap. And the only host of Oddballs.
Yeah, the only.
Oh, Oddball?
No Emilio in that.
That's the tagline.
The tagline, if you like Emilio, this isn't the place. If you hate Emilio,
this isn't the place for you.
This is the place for you.
Yeah.
Emilio wanted me to remind you. He said I could bring it up on the air. to go. He has gifts for you. Go pick them up.
He's had
some gifts for you that have been sitting around for a year, though. That's no knock on you. That's more on him for never getting them to you.
Right. I also know that he sadly, his house had there was flooding in Staten Island that was really tragic. And his house had some flooding, which is not funny. But what is funny is his Voltron Lego box got damaged. So now it's not perfect. So he's giving it to me.
Yeah, like he's giving you all these He-Man and Voltron figures.
All the shit that are not perfect.
Because, well, I mean, the figures themselves are perfect. They're pristine.
Right, and I take them out of the box.
But they don't have a box.
Well, he didn't even take the Legos out of a box. I told him once, I was like, this isn't a thing that people do. Even like nobody collects Legos and doesn't open them. That's not right. A thing. They're Legos.
The fun of Lego is you put it together.
All right, we're off on another tangent from Emilio Sparks to Norm MacDonald. Every comedic gold mine we can think of.
Yeah.
But today's episode is about an Italian important heritage. You bet. Is it Marconi, the creator of the wireless telegraph? No, it is not. Is it about
Christopher Columbus?
No, it's not. It's about Mario.
Ah,
last name also Mario.
I love that. That's actually canon.
You bet it is.
They took it right from the movie.
The movie is more canon than people want to admit.
It's true. Like the fact that in Mario 64, when you could jump through the walls,
yeah,
I immediately thought, oh, that's from the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here to talk about Mario. We've talked about Mario before. If you like hearing me and Vin chat about America's favorite plumber, we'll just go up on the feed there. And now I'm talking like Norm. Just guys, go.
Yeah, go up on the the feed.
Yeah, go up on the go up on the feed there. And
well, now you're doing Norm doing Letterman.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, go on the feed.
You like the shrimp?
You got any gum?
Yeah, we talked about the Mario movie.
Yeah,
which is an underrated movie. If you want to hear us sing its praises and explain why it's a great sci-fi fantasy, go. And
if you're a fan of Blade Runner, go check out the Mario movie.
Absolutely, I believe people from Blade Runner actually worked on that.
Yeah.
Well, today we're doing a list, and God, you know the internet loves a list. Today we are doing best and worst Mario games. Now you might be saying, "Holy shit! Aren't there literally hundreds of Mario games?" Yes. So we whittled it down by saying our rule was the word Mario has to appear in the title.
Well, it's got to be a mainline Mario game, which that makes it significantly harder.
Right. You can't.
Like, you can't be like, oh, well, Hotel Mario is a bit. No, that's right, Hotel right, Mario right. Doesn't count.
Any or like Mario History, like any of those CD-ROM educational games with Mario.
And no spinoffs. So right. No Mario Luigi's Kart.
Mansion.
No Wario games.
Oh, no Mario Kart?
No Mario Kart.
Oh, we might. Oh, all right. Well, I'm coming out the gate with a problem here.
This is going to be a
contentious episode.
Okay. Well, if it's going to be controversial, I may allow.
I warned Vin earlier this week. Some of my picks are controversial. I think one of my picks for least favorite or worst is controversial, but we'll get to that. Mario is such a good franchise. I can't.
It was way harder to pick three on like the least column.
That was hard, but also it was hard to pick favorites because it's like we decided in order to not take up everybody's time that we would both do six, three of our favorite and three of our least favorite. Or I can't figure out whether it's least favorite or worst. You know, like they're all basically good.
Well, that's the hard part. It's like even the worst Mario, even the worst like mainline Mario game is still like better than your Bubsies and your Zools of the world. Like,
yeah. Mario is, you know, we're talking about the arguably the best video game franchise.
Well, let's get into it then. What's your number three in the best?
So I did three. I don't know necessarily if they're in order of 3, 2, 1.
Okay, I did 3, 2, 1.
Oh, no, that's good. All right. I'll try to do that as I read them off. But since we already tipped it, one of my favorites is Mario Kart. Now, I'm cheating because Mario Kart appears on multiple things. But I'm going to say that what I mean is Mario Kart 64.
Really? Because a lot of people go back and they think Mario Kart 64 is sort of one of the lesser ones because it doesn't have as many features. It's kind of bare bones when you look at especially the later games.
Yeah.
But I think it it was the first Mario Kart. It took a big step up from Super Mario Kart.
Right. I think for me, I think when I think about Mario Kart franchise, I think mostly about the original Super Nintendo one and the 64 one. And I think maybe a lot of this is going to be soaked in just nostalgia of my own personal life. I remember playing a lot more of the 64 one with friends, you know, those levels where you had the balloons and you were just trying to like kill each other.
Oh yeah, the battle mode.
So many hours doing that, so much fun doing that. You know, I think I've played some of the Wii Mario Kart, and then there's the Mario Kart that's on Switch. I think there's too many bells and whistles. How about that? There's a little too much going on, I think, now in Mario Kart.
Too many items, too many ways to...
Yeah, do you want to fit on your thing? Do you want your... Like, there's just too much happening. Because it was a simple, beautiful game. And
you like the elegance of like, hey, here's just enough.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's not just enough. It's perfect. It's, you know, we've talked before about like the Tetris franchise. Every Tetris sequel has been bad because it's a perfectly constructed game. So all you can do is fuck with it. All you can right. do is ruin it. How about the pieces explode? Like, all right, no.
Yeah, let's put it in a sphere shape.
It's like no, thank you. So Mario Kart is Mario Kart 64. I think one of the best, one of the ones that I think I had the most joy playing. But I've had joy playing lots and lots of Mario games.
Okay, well, my number three is Super Mario Land 2: 6 Golden Coins.
I am not familiar with this game.
You should look it up and look at some screenshots. It's
wait, is this your number three?
This is my number three.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
This is for Game Boy. So there was Super Mario Land, which was very simplified. It was like the first Mario game that they put on Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like when you think about the original NES, and there's the games that first came out for NES that looked very primitive.
Yeah.
And then, like, a couple of years later when the NES, like, finally got going, like, you could see what it could really do.
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of the case between Mario Land and Mario Land 2. Like, Mario Land looked radically different. The models and the sprites looked very, like, they were very simplified. I don't know if you remember Mario Land.
I don't. I remember, wasn't there a sequel to Mario World that was, like, Yoshi's Island?
That was on Super Nintendo. That was Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. That was a great game.
That was a Super Nintendo game. I don't know. Some reason, I think of that as a handheld game.
Well, they did do a port of it for the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
But that was a Super Nintendo game. But 6 Golden Coins was them going, okay, we did Mario Land, but now we actually know what we're doing. So we're going to kind of take the Mario World experience and for the first time, like, shrink it down to the Game Boy. So it had pretty much like the look of Mario World. You had a world map like Mario World, and you basically had these 6 areas you can go to. And when you beat a boss, like, you got a golden coin. And when you got all 6, you unlocked the final boss area, which was Mario's castle that he lives in that's been taken over by the newly appearing Wario.
Oh, so is this Wario's first appearance?
Yeah, and he's the main bad guy. You fight Wario at the end.
That must have been a refreshing change from Bowser.
Yeah, it really was, because it was like you're fighting almost like a version of yourself, only evil. So it was like a nice mix-up. And then it had like Game Boy exclusive power-ups too.
Okay.
Like, the power-ups were all different. Like, there were a couple areas where you can go to space, and basically, like, when you jump, like, the gravity was lower. So you could, like, jump really high, and if you kept jumping, you could basically float. And there were, like, floating puzzles, almost like
that's awesome. Flight.
There was, like, a carrot power-up where you can get basically rabbit ears, and you could jump off high ledges and sort of, like, float your way down.
Right.
Instead of a fire power, because the Game Boy's screen only has 2 colors,
right.
You had a Super Ball power-up.
Okay.
So it would shoot a ball.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. And the worlds were radically different too. Like, there was one world that was like a giant Mario statue that had like all sorts of contraptions inside. Well, and then there was like a Halloween world you could go to. where all the enemies were like ghosts and witches and stuff. Like, it was really like, right. It was just a really unique Mario game that they never really sort of used any of those power-ups or assets really ever again. So it sort of holds like this really unique place,
right,
in the Mario, wow, like canon.
See, when I think about the Mario franchise, I think what makes it so great is it's just endless imagination. There's just so much. It's a feast for the eyes. It's fun more than anything. It's colorful. I mean, it's sort of, you can't, it's like a shiny, you know, rock. You can't help but be attracted to it. You get so much, you know, visually from this franchise.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, what's your, or should we do, what's your number three least favorite?
No, let's wait.
We'll do the best first. Okay.
Yeah, because least favorite is more negative and people love negativity.
Okay. So what's your number two best Mario game?
Super Mario World, Super Nintendo. This is, now I'll be honest with you, I went back and forth between Mario 3 and this.
Okay, well then I should say I put Mario 3 as my number two.
Okay, good. See, Mario 3 and Super Mario World were being developed at the same time. One to be like the send-off for the NES and one as the entree into the Super NES. Two different teams, but basically working together. And they are both, it's like a 1-2 punch of revolutionizing the series. You know, both together really changed the whole game of what a Mario game is. But I'm just going to on the scale, I have to lean a little bit more towards Mario World, because I think Mario World is just extraordinary. And this is where you get Yoshi for the first time. This is where they say, hey, let's bring dinosaurs into this, which ended up being a huge influence on the movie. The movie became all about dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, like you said, Mario 3 sort of it changed everything, because they almost couldn't. They weren't working off of Mario 2. Mario 2 was a whole different thing.
No.
Even though I actually really like Mario 2 for what it is.
Right. But Mario 2 famously was a different game in Japan and was just ported over to America, and they changed the skins on the characters. They basically took an interesting game and turned it into a Mario game.
Yeah. So like, if you're going right from the first Mario to Mario 3, again, it's like a huge leap. Now there's a world map.
The map.
Now there's like items you can use.
Yeah.
The only real knock on Mario 3 is that at the time there was no save system.
Right.
So it's like, if you got really far, you kind of had to just, like, a lot of people I think would like leave the system on and like turn the TV off.
Right. And then come back
to it later.
Right. The old school.
Yeah. And then like,
hope your older brother doesn't kick it, or there's no glitch, or the cat doesn't touch it.
But like, I gave 3 the nod because 3 was the one that set the template for World. Like, you can't have Mario World
absolutely
without Mario 3. And I think, I don't know, I've always found myself, when I really think about going back to Mario 3 a little more, even though I grew up and love Mario World, I think that Mario 3 has a little more, like a touch more character to it. Like, they lean a little heavy on the dinosaurs in Mario World. And some of the levels, like near the beginning of the game, there's a lot of forest levels.
Yeah.
And then, like, near the end of the game, there's a whole bunch of forest levels, because you go to the Neverforth here. So, you know what I mean? So it's like they kind of reuse certain areas. Like, it's still great, but then you look at Mario 3, and it's like they put out every big idea they wanted. Like, there was that whole world where it's like, everything is gigantic.
Right. And then in the end, instead of doing the Bowser's in a castle, he's on the airship, right?
Yeah, so like that was really unique.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And you had that forced scroll that you had to keep up with. Oh, God, the amount of frustration playing the end of Mario 3. No, Mario 3, it's absolutely incredible. But, you know, both Mario 3 and Mario World flirt with Mario flying, and I would prefer the cape with the feather power-up from Mario World to the Tanuki suit from Mario 3.
Okay.
So also with Mario 3, and this is not a knock on the game, it's just a knock on myself, you've got those whistles all those like recorders that if you get, you can skip ahead.
Yeah.
And at least when I was a kid, whenever I knew something like that, I ended up, I'd be like, yeah, I got to the end, but I'm not, I didn't realize that I was denying myself joy.
Yeah. Like you're skipping whole chunks of the game. It's like in Mario 1 when you take the warp pipe.
Right.
In like level 2 all the way to like level 6. It's like you just skip like half the game.
And also you didn't learn the skills you needed to learn. So now you're dropped into a level of difficulty you're not
prepared for. No, you're not prepared for it.
Right. Yeah, Mario 3 and Mario World are together, I think. They're like
two sides. They're the backbone for modern 2D Mario.
Yes, agreed.
Which now we only got one left now because we kind of...
Right, we did your three. So then what is what's your number one?
My number one is Super Mario Galaxy.
I love this pick, Vin.
Now, is that your number one? You don't say it yet. Okay, so good. We have different ones on this. So Galaxy...
But don't think that wasn't almost on my list.
No, because Galaxy, and I've replayed it since because they re-released it for Switch.
Yes.
And then took it away for some reason. But
yeah, I played it last year.
But still holds up. The controls on Switch are actually, they work. Like you wouldn't think, they might have to compromise a little bit. Like it works, like the pointing and clicking parts. Like it actually works. But even at the time, it's the most refined 3D Mario.
Yes.
Where like it really boils down like the essence of Mario, like what makes Mario work, and gives it to you without giving you too much.
Yes.
Where like Mario 64, even I would say Mario Odyssey, and I love Mario Odyssey for different reasons. But like even those games, it's like here's a big world, go explore. Whereas Mario Galaxy sort of does half and half. In terms of it kind of takes the old map formula that we were just talking about, the early Marios, but will give you you'll go to a planet.
Yeah.
And there'll be like two missions on this one planet. There may be like four missions on this one planet. So you've got things to do, but it's segmented into different tasks or different level pieces.
Right.
So it's like you've got one objective and the core, and it's one course that's laid out for you that you have to get to the end of.
Yes.
Or like complete the task with. So it's almost like, I don't want to say it's bite-sized challenges because that's selling it short, but it's like it's very refined. It really trims the fat off of the Mario games.
Right. Well, I love Odyssey, the newest one for Switch of this kind. But Odyssey is almost like it's like Dadaism. It's like insanity. It deserves its own it's its own insane thing. But I agree with you that when it comes to Galaxy is so sleek. First of all, let's just talk aesthetically. He's always had the star as a power-up to make him invulnerable. So they were like, let's take the star and let's go cosmic. Let's fucking, you know, what if Jack Kirby made a fucking Mario game?
The way I described it for years was it feels like if all the Mario games up to that point were TV shows.
Yeah.
This is the Mario movie.
Yeah.
Like it's got the big for the first time, it's got this big orchestral score.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The graphics are perfect. It's still truly hold up cinematic. Today. It feels cinematic.
Yeah. And it's just gorgeous. Look, I love the look of it. And even the gameplay, I feel like they haven't, you know, the gameplay of when you would get on a planet, especially a smaller planet, you could walk like 360. You could walk around and you think at first this is going to be very confusing, but it's not. And that gameplay mechanic is just so joyful. That's the thing. And I think this is true for maybe the whole series, except for the ones that are really bad. The Mario games always feel good in your hand. Galaxy, when you're, there's a lot of flying in Galaxy or being sort of whipped from one place to another. It feels so good. It feels so good. Galaxy's fantastic. Good choice.
Now what is your number one?
But wait, before we get to that, there is a Galaxy 2, which I actually have never played. Have you played Galaxy 2?
Galaxy 2 is great. I know some people that actually prefer Galaxy 2.
I feel like no one talks about it.
It's weird because I don't get, like, Nintendo released that set last year where it was Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and Mario Galaxy.
Right.
But it was like they didn't have Mario Galaxy 2 in there.
Right. I feel like no one even talks about it. And I never played it.
It's a great game.
Is it basically it's
more
like
of the same?
Is it like a DLC?
No, it's a fully fledged game. Yoshi's in it.
It's long.
It's long. It's as long, if not a little longer. than Mario Galaxy. But it's kind of just like more of the same, but new power. Like if you loved Mario Galaxy, there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't also be in love with Mario Galaxy.
Well, 2. I'll write a strongly worded letter to Nintendo asking them to please put a Switch version out.
Yeah, because Nintendo, if they're known for one thing, it's responding to fan requests for game releases.
Yeah. Okay, well, my number one, and it's interesting, we've been paralleling each other. My number one is Mario 64.
Okay.
Because Mario 64 needed to crawl before Galaxy can fly.
Yeah.
Mario 64 is one of those titles, you know, if every title is a leap forward, Mario 64 is one of these five leaps forwards, just a boom.
Yeah, it's also an interesting title because I think if you ask people, because we were both there for it, and I think if you ask people who were not there for it, like younger people, they may say, well, I understand the importance of Mario 64, but maybe it's like lacking a little bit. And I get that. But if you were there for it, like, right. I think context is everything. Like,
sure.
It felt like such a leap forward. And the one thing, if you take one thing away from Mario 64,
yeah,
it's that before Mario 64 came along, nobody, not one developer knew how to do motion in three dimensions.
Right. I mean, that's really the big leap. It's Mario's now not a side scroller. He's still a platformer, but he's not a side scroller.
But I'm saying that every 3D game that came out before Mario had tank controls. They had Resident Evil controls.
Yeah.
Where you would basically like go side to side to direct where you wanted to go.
Right.
And then you would go forward to move in that direction.
Right.
Mario came along and now all of a sudden, like, it's hard to even explain how it worked,
right?
Because it's a no-brainer. Like, you move
right
in the direction and Mario goes in that direction.
And again, they design it to be so pleasing. I mean, when Mario does the triple jump, and then the somersault on the third, it feels so good. You find yourself just doing that just for fun. And they continued that through Galaxy and Odyssey.
Mm.
In a way, Mario 64 followed by Mario Galaxy and then Mario Odyssey are like, it's themselves a trilogy because they right. very much work the same way. They very much feel the same way. They're different games distinctly, but the three of them themselves sort of feel like this is as important as, you know, 1, 2, and 3 are, or 1, 3 and World are. I feel like these are the 3D trilogy.
Right. These are the leaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that soundtrack.
Yeah. Look, Mario 64, again, it's drenched in my own personal nostalgia. I just have spent so much of my life playing it. And, you know, again, last year when they put out that All-Star thing, I played it. I played Odyssey, then Galaxy, then 64. I went backwards. And it never felt like I had my shins cut off. You know what I mean? It never felt like, it always felt good. It always felt right.
Yeah.
You got that fucking penguin that you want to throw him off. You just throw him into nothing.
Well, I think one of the brilliant things that they did with Mario 64 that I think is also one of the criticisms that people have now, but again, context is everything, is they really front loaded that game with all the good stuff. Within the first, 2 to 4 hours of that game, I think you've seen most of the best stuff, but that's not a knock because you're going from like a great world to like a great underwater world, which like how many times can you say there's like great underwater levels in
right,
a game?
Right. Even the early Mario games, the underwater levels sometimes are tedious.
Yeah. But like when you get to the later levels in the game, like some of them do get a little more obtuse where it's like, oh, this level is just a bunch of shapes.
Like, right, exactly. But you know that first water world where you have to like that giant serpent comes out and he's got
it's frightening.
It's terrifying. It still gives me nightmares. He has the star on his tail. Just the idea of like, you know, it used to be like before that it was, you know, this is a side scroller platform, make it to the end. And now this, you know, 64 was like, okay, this is this big sandbox that's full of nonsense. And you have to collect things now, and they might be in all sorts of weird places. And there's ones that you can see that you won't be able to get. Don't even care. Don't even try because the power-up comes way later and you're gonna have to come back and get it. Just all that was such a a mind-bending game changer. Sometimes I feel like these Mario games taught us how to play games.
Well, the Mario games have always been very good at showing, not telling. Where yeah. It's like any game can tell you what to do, but oftentimes if they're telling you what to do, they're not doing a good job because you're not putting anything into practice. How many times have you played a game or rented a game where it's like, okay, it tells you like, okay, go do this. And then you're like, okay, but how do I do it? What do I, like, there's no, I haven't done any training. Like there's no working up to it.
Right.
Whereas the Mario games, they'll start by giving you a small objective where it's like, okay, I got this. And it sort of teaches you to crawl. And then by the time you're ready to run, it's like, okay, like here's the, like now we're going to give you the big challenge.
Right. Think about it. Mario games often are the first release with a new Mario platform, with a new Nintendo console. And it's almost like, okay, here's Mario to teach you how to use this console. We're going to show you all the gimmicks. And in some ways, it never reaches that height again. You know, I feel like, you know, I think the Wii was an important time. Okay. It was a charming system. And there's certainly highlights of the Wii, like we just said, Galaxy. But I think there are some real stinkers on the Wii. And I think there's a lot of bad games that were games developed by a third-party company that they tried to put on every console, but then they didn't know how to make it with the Wiimotes. So it just looked like garbage, or it never felt right.
We had a lot of shovelware. We had a lot of companies going, hey, let's put out a mini game pack.
Yeah.
Or like, here's a circus party fun pack. Mm-hmm. It's like, who the fuck put this? Like, and it would just be there to basically ride off the coattails of like Wii Sports.
Right. It was big. Some people, that's all they ever played. And
I was just going to say, some people only had Wii Sports, and that was just
especially
like,
especially the bowling. Some people only did the bowling on Wii Sports.
Right. Like some people only had Wii Sports. It came with the Wii. So basically they just bought a Wii, never bought anything else, and would just use it for like when friends would come over and they just have a bunch of Wii remotes and be like, let's play Wii bowling or, you know, Wii Frisbee or whatever.
I remember one day hanging out at a drug dealer's house.
Okay.
And it was it wasn't a party, but it was like a hangout sitch. And, you know, the way it would work back when I was a naughty boy, you would like buy, but also like then you'd like, it'd be like, I buy around, you buy around. And this, by the way, was years after Wii came out. This was like way later. And we just smoked a ton of weed and played Wii bowling. And it was fucking great.
Yeah.
So there's that endorsement. Do you have any, before we move on to our dislikes, do you have any honorable mentions for things that you need to talk about, things that are important on the like list, could have been on the like list?
Yeah, I would say, I know we weren't going to do spinoffs, but if we're doing honorable mentions,
go right ahead.
I would say a game that we already talked about that's technically a Mario game is Yoshi's Island.
Okay.
I think that's a great game that people should pick. Like, don't be deterred by the fact that it's Yoshi in it and not Mario. Like, it's still an amazing platformer. The art design is brilliant. Like, it's got this great, like, sort of, like, thick layered, like, crayon style. And also, I would say the Wario Land series does not get enough love. The Wario Land games are a spinoff of the Mario games. In fact, Wario Land, much like Yoshi's Island, is called Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land.
Oh, okay.
And then they went off and did their own things. But like those games are great in their own right. They take the Mario formula. And I don't know if you know what the gimmick is.
Isn't there a baby Mario in that?
No. That's Yoshi's Island.
Oh, okay.
But the Wario Land games, Wario, after the first game, in all the subsequent ones, Wario can't die.
What?
And it's more like a platformer puzzler where like each enemy, if you get hit by them, gives you a certain power. So like if you get stung by a bee, Wario will blow up and like start floating for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Or like if you get bit by a bat, like he'll become a zombie for a little bit and he'll be able to crumble and then like go underneath like walls and stuff. Like it's all these like fun, wacky power-ups.
Okay. See, I always felt like if they made a sequel to the Mario movie with Bob Hoskins as Mario, say, let's say Bob Hoskins came back as Mario.
It's got to be Danny DeVito as Wario.
See, I'm thinking Burt Young, Paulie from the Rocky movies. Just like a dirtier, scummier Mario.
Burt Young.
Mario, can I borrow a 10 spot?
Happy birthday, Wario.
Okay, fantastic. So I have two honorable mentions, and they're both basically spinoffs. One is Dr. Mario, and it's not on my list because I felt like it didn't count. It was outside the rules. But I have to say, of all like the Mario games that aren't really Mario games, I love Dr. Mario. I've said this hot take before, and I'll say it again. I like it better than Tetris. I think Dr. Mario is a really good, I don't even know what you call those games, stackers. There's a ton of them now on you get on your phone. Dr. Mario, I think, is awesome. It's an awesome game. And the other would be Mario Paint.
Yeah.
I mean, the first movies, quote unquote, that I ever made, I made as a child on Mario Paint. And I would like record them on my VHS. Like, I'd be like, I made a movie. And I'd be like thousands of like.
Yeah, no, I remember going over my cousin's house, who was a little older than me. And he had videotapes chock full of just him recording his finished Mario Paint movies.
Exactly. That's what you did. It was exactly what they wanted it to be. It really, like, your imagination just went wild. It was crazy. And you got to think Mario Paint it's before Microsoft Paint, right? So.
No, I think Microsoft Paint was definitely out.
What? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Mario Paint was like 94.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was that late. Yeah, so it's just completely like, you know, it set your imagination free.
Even today, if you go on YouTube, like just the music portion alone, like people have done so much with just that Mario Paint music editor.
Right. And I think Mario Maker in some ways is the descendant of that game. Because, I mean, it's a different thing, but it's still this idea of like, hey, just this thing that you love, we can crack it open and you can play with it. You can do stuff with it.
Yeah, I would say, you know what? I would put Mario Maker on my honorable mentions as well.
Yes.
Because that's one that I've said before, I don't even make levels in that game. I just play everyone else's levels because there's so much.
You know, you've got these elements, you've got these, values that are so good, and it almost makes every Mario game a genre. And like, what can I, you know, and especially in the late, you know, later on, because it's like you can pick from Mario 1, you can pick from Mario World, and it's like you pick a genre and then you can make
infinite Mario levels, basically. Yeah.
It's incredible. And some people make insane levels that are like unbeatable, but like you have to beat them, I think, for them to accept it, right? Or it has to be.
Yeah, you have to be able to beat your own level.
It can't be a Kobayashi Maru. Like it has to be.
Right.
You can beat it, even if it's ridiculously hard.
Right.
All right. So you want to get to the negative?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What's your number three least favorite Mario game?
Well, I kind of mentioned it a little before, but Super Mario Land.
Okay.
I think that once Super Mario Land 2 came out, it immediately made Super Mario Land irrelevant. Mario Land was like a good try, and you know, given the hardware, and then Mario Land 2 was like, no, this is the real thing, and we're never looking back.
Well, what do you think went wrong? What doesn't work?
It's not that it doesn't work, because again, like a lot of Mario games, even the worst one is still like a good Game Boy game, but it's just, it doesn't feel like Mario. He's in like a different world in that game.
Right.
All the sprites look radically different. They're all like super pared down. The enemies are all kind of different. Like you're like the world, like the, in, like world one is kind of like your typical Mario world.
Right.
But then like world two, you're in like a pyramid, like ancient Egyptian, like music, and like the boss is like a Sphinx, and you're saving Daisy instead of Princess Peach. Like everything just feels wrong in it.
Okay.
Even though it is still like a solid game, it doesn't have the, like, if you look up Mario, like Super Mario Land for the Game Boy,
yeah,
like you'll see instantly what I'm talking about, because it looks like, you'll see by the look of it, it is radically different.
It's funny. I think that's the thing that will probably keep coming up on this list, is the bad Mario games don't feel right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't feel like the way we've learned that Mario games ought to feel.
Yeah. Like one of the things, and this is like a nothing thing, but it's just like indicative of a bigger issue at the game. When you get the star power up, it doesn't play the like, it plays Public Domain. It plays like the can-can music.
Why would they do such a thing?
I don't know, but it plays like weird can-can music.
That's some bullshit.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, I'm looking at some of it now. Mario's back for his best adventure yet. Not according to Vin.
Nope.
I see cats. So are cats involved in this?
Yeah. Yeah, big cats.
Yeah.
Okay. They're shooting. There's whole levels where it's like a shooter, where like you're flying a spaceship.
Was this like the main or the first Mario release for the Game Boy, or did they?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is like the pack, like outside of Tetris, which was the first pack-in game for the Game Boy. This was also like one of the first like pack-in games.
Okay. Okay. And Tetris was huge.
Tetris was the
big. And you could see why it would work as a handheld.
Yeah. So it's like not a terrible game, but like interesting first try, but like then they nailed it and they were off to the races.
Okay. So my number three is a wild pick, and it's because I had a hard time picking three that I don't like. And this one's kind of breaking our rules because it's definitely a spinoff.
Okay.
And this is Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games 2007.
Okay. Specifically 2007.
Yes. Well, that's the only one I played, and I only feel okay. Right.
Because there's a million of them now.
Right. I only feel right judging games that I've played.
Okay.
I played this only for about 10 minutes and hated it and got rid of it. It's absolute. I know. I hated it. And
to be fair, I have heard that they've gotten much better in the 14 years since you've played that one.
Oh, great. Great. I want to see Mario and Sonic in the Olympic Village just fucking everybody. He's going, everyone getting COVID and hepatitis. You know, I just watched the Seth Rogen produced documentary Console Wars, which is about Sega Genesis versus Super Nintendo. And it's a really good documentary. And boy, did they really were at each other's throats. Like, it got ugly. Like, there were physical altercations between executives and stuff. Like, it, like, you think like, oh, you know, it's an oligopoly, Coke versus Pepsi, who really doesn't really matter. Nintendo and Sega really tried to destroy each other.
Well, and that's the weird thing. Well, the weird thing to me was never that, okay, they eventually, like, one side won and they eventually, you know, okay, you had Sonic games on GameCube.
That's what's weird to me. That's what's weird to me.
But that's not the weird part to me, because eventually you could kind of, eventually that was like destined to happen almost. The weird thing to me is when they finally chose to like put the two together and be like, they're finally coming together at the Olympic Games. It's like, well, right. What? Why?
Well, you know, Sonic lost every race because right before they would shoot the starter pistol, Mario surreptitiously would lean into Sonic's ear and go, I own you. Which would really fuck up Sonic's game. Really get in his head. No, you know, I think I didn't like the game. I didn't like the gameplay. But I think as a person who was young in the 90s and 80s, part of me was like, how dare these two be together? You know what I mean? It's like...
And that they would get together to celebrate the Olympics.
Right. It, you know, when you were a kid, it was like, or when I was a kid, it was like, you know, Letterman or Leno, Sonic or Mario. Fucking choose one. Snapple or Arizona. You can't have both. Fucking choose one.
No, so now they're together. They've had a long, fruitful Olympic partnership.
Oh, God. God damn. So that's my number three. It's probably not fair because I rented it at a Blockbuster and then like went, you know, it was that, oh, I rented one home, put it in, and then it's like that 5 minutes of it doesn't feel right.
And that's the thing. You always... Like, yeah.
You know, video games are different from films and books. You know, like a video game, you know it's bad when it just, it doesn't feel intuitive. It's not doing what you want it to do. And you're like, oh, this isn't it. This isn't right.
Well, yeah, especially going back to like the 16-bit era where you'd rent, like I remember renting so many Sega Genesis games and you'd get it home and you'd play for like, you said, like 10, 15 minutes and you just kind of get stuck.
Right.
And you'd be like, okay, well, what do I do? And like, it wasn't like you could, like now I would just Google it.
Right.
And maybe you'd get over that hump and then you'd find out the game is actually really good. But sometimes there'd be games that people said were great, but like you'd never know it because you just can't get past like the first level. There was really obtuse. It was like an X-Men game for Sega Genesis that famously, I didn't know it at the time, but like later on, I come to find out that like near the end of the first level, you get to a control panel. And you're Wolverine, you get to his control panel.
Sure.
And it's just in the background, so you don't really know that you have to do anything. Not only do you have to activate the control panel, the way you activate the control panel is you have to hit the reset button on your Genesis.
What? Who would ever think such a thing?
Exactly.
It, you know, it's still a medium basically in its infancy or stepping out of its infancy now. Some of those old games, it's just like, this is bad because it's made poorly. Yeah. You know what I mean? Wow. That's stinky. What's your number two?
Oh, my number two, even though I do kind of like this game, it's not what people wanted at the time. And for that big sin alone, I would have to put Mario Sunshine on the list at number two. Because
that's actually my number one.
Okay. Well,
that's my least favorite game. I would rather you know, watch puppies die than play that game.
Well, again, it's one of those things where if it wasn't Mario, if it was just like its own thing and people said like, oh, you got to check out this. It's like really interesting. You've got a jet pack and it's just tropical thing. I think people would have been more receptive to it.
Perhaps. Yeah. But
the fact that it wasn't, the GameCube came out and Luigi's Mansion was the big like killer app for it, right, which I loved, but certainly I was in the minority. Even though Luigi's Mansion does have its fans, it's a great looking game. It's a very
the last game. One. I just played the last one for Switch and it's fucking incredible.
It's great. Like the Luigi's
Mansion. Best Ghostbusters game they ever made.
Yeah. The Luigi's Mansion games, all three of them, are better than any Ghostbusters game they've ever put out.
Yeah.
But it's not what people wanted at the time because you expect you want your new Mario game.
Right.
And then not only did you want a new Mario game, but now we're coming off Mario 64.
Right.
Which was a while ago because they never made a sequel on N64.
Right.
So you felt like, okay, it's been a long time now. What, you know, like, what are they going to do? And instead of giving you a straightforward, basically instead of giving you Mario Galaxy then,
right,
they did something where they added a fresh gimmick to it. And it's like, you didn't need a gimmick Mario game at that point. That was not the...
Right.
If that was like the second game they came out with on GameCube,
yeah.
Again, I think people would have been much more receptive. They would have been like, oh, what's this like cool experimental Mario game they put out with the jetpack? But because it was the Mario game they decided to put out, it felt a little off to people.
See, for me, everything that's good about Mario games, they do wrong. Mario games give you a bunch of different lands with a bunch of different aesthetics. This game goes, no, it's one aesthetic. It's tropical.
It's all tropical. Yeah.
Mario is about power-ups. This game goes, no, you got this water pack thing. And basically it's all about that. And that's everything. And I'm sorry. I think it's confusing. I just played it. You know, when I got my Switch, I went on a run where I played Luigi's Mansion, I played Mario 64, I played Galaxy, and then I came time to play Mario Sunshine, and I had played it and then quit it years before. And I was like, you know what? It's time to give this game a second chance. And the exact same thing happened. I played it and I was like, I don't get what I'm supposed to be doing. There's sewers and I'm going inside them and I'm traveling, but what am I doing? What is my real objective? It's confusing. And to get back to what we were saying before, it doesn't feel like Mario.
One of the, I think the only Mario game where there's actual spoken long form dialogue.
Well, yeah, doesn't he have like a trial?
There's a trial and he's got to clean up Delfino Island. Boy. And then Bowser speaks in it, which I don't like.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that.
So again, it was just like interesting but weird choices. I will say, to be fair, people have reported there were issues with the controls on the Switch version. So maybe if you, I will concede that maybe.
But I also fucking hated it when I played it on the GameCube.
Yeah, so I don't know if that maybe would have made a difference if you went back.
I have to admit that it's maybe the only GameCube game I ever played. That was a console that kind of completely passed me by. I was too old, but also too young. No one was going to buy it for me, but I didn't have enough money myself to buy it.
Right.
I was going out, and you know what I mean? Like, it was just an in-between time.
It was the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah.
You missed out on some great games. I mean, the GameCube... I think it was this past week. GameCube's 20 years old.
Wow. But, you know, it's number two on your list, and I hear you defending it. Dig in. Tell me, do you agree with my critiques, or what do you think? What do you think puts this on your worst list?
Again, I think it's not the Mario game that I wanted. It's not the Mario game that people wanted at the time. I think that I would have liked more variety. I appreciate the fact that they said we're going to have it be one giant world, and that world is tropical. But, and this may be just me, like maybe you feel the same way, but whenever something is set in a tropical world that's not normally set in a tropical world, it feels like this is like a side thing.
Right, right.
Like, oh, Mario's on vacation. Like
right, he's not, right.
Like he's not doing the normal stuff.
He literally was on vacation.
And it's funny because like, that, again, there's good stuff in the game. Like Yoshi's in it. You can ride Yoshi around.
I never got that far. Who's the big boss in it? Is Bowser in it? Who's in it?
It's Bowser. Bowser's son is in it, and then there's like a Shadow Mario.
Shadow Mario. Yeah.
And what's funny about Sunshine is that there's these bonus level that people universally love about it because they're sort of like the precursor to what Galaxy would become. It's sort of like giving you a little sneak peek. I don't know if you got far enough.
Nope.
Where like when you go to a bonus area, they basically like take your jetpack away and you have to run through like this, like a course, like in an open void, like Mario Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
So it's sort of like you get a little taste of what Mario Galaxy would become. And the funny thing is, like, a lot of people would play those levels and be like, I kind of wish this was the whole game.
Right. And then it was.
Then it was with Galaxy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like a lot of, I think the fact that there was a lot of uncanny stuff in it. I like the jetpack, but I think that's
the perfect word for it, uncanny.
It's uncanny.
Unfamiliar. You know, the familiar made unfamiliar. You know, right. I think whether these games, you know, these games are all different and they grow and stuff, but I think that there's a continuity in the way that Mario moves. And I think if you make him move in a way that doesn't feel like the way he always moved, it's going to feel wrong.
Yeah, and again, like the over reliance on the jetpack and the cultural appropriation. Yeah, I mean, again, it was a gimmick Mario game.
Yeah,
it wasn't here's Mario and hey, this is a power up you can get at some point and use it. But it's like no, you're strapped to fit the entire game. So it's like you better like it because if you don't like it, then you're just the whole game is lost on you.
But what's interesting is I think about Luigi's Mansion. And I love the feel of the vacuum. And it's a similar thing, yet a world apart, because in Luigi's Mansion, the vacuum, I just love it. Whereas the water thing, it just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah. Again, like strapping a gimmick to it ensured that some people were just, it was just going to be like too big a barrier to entry.
Yeah. All right. So
that was your number one. So what's your number two?
That was your number two, though, right?
Yeah.
So I'll give my number two, then you give your number one.
Yeah.
All right. This is the one that I think is controversial. It's Super Mario Brothers 2. I know this
I don't know if that's controversial.
Some people swear it up and down. There are things in it that they, even though it was based on a different game, and they just made it a Mario game, there are things in it that persist. This is the game that introduces, firstly, that Luigi isn't just a clone of Mario, but he's different. He's taller. And it also introduces Luigi's jump. This is also where we introduce, if you play as Peach, she can glide. Mm-hmm. Some things are introduced. And I know some people love the music. Some people love the idea.
There's enemies that have stayed, like Shy Guys have persisted throughout the series.
Some people really love the Shadow World aspect of it.
Mm.
It does have its lovers. But to me, even as a kid, before I knew that it was based on something else, it always felt like this doesn't feel like 1 in 3. 1 in 3 feel like something, and this feels like something different. And then, of course, it's a dream, right? It's not real.
Yeah, that's how they sort of put a cover over it. It's like, oh, it was all a dream. Like, but I would say I feel the opposite of what I feel about Mario Sunshine with Mario 2, where Mario Sunshine took a departure, and I don't think it paid off. I think Mario 2 took a big departure, but is still like a solid game in its own right. Yeah, like, well, if it wasn't right. Whether the characters are Mario or whether the characters are from Doki Doki Panic, like,
right.
I think the game itself, like, remember, it was still a game developed by Shigeru Miyamoto.
Right.
So
right.
It's still like a solid platform.
It's not god awful. It's not on my worst list because I think that it's actually a bad game. It's that I feel like it's highly overrated. And I feel like, again, it doesn't feel enough to me like a Mario game. If you've got in front of me, hey, play any Mario game, that's never going to be the one that I pick up.
Right. I don't know. Every once in a while, I get a hankering for some Mario too, but it's never, but I see what you're saying. Like, again, with Mario Sunshine, it's the black sheep of that era.
It's absolutely the black sheep. Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. Going back to Sunshine, was there any other Mario titles on GameCube? Was that it?
I mean, there were, Mario Kart games. There was Mario Kart Double Dash.
Okay. Is Mark Summers in that?
No. That's Double Dare.
Oh.
Trying to think of what else. I'm sure there were a couple of other Mario spinning. You know what?
But Sunshine was the big Mario game for that.
Sunshine was the big. That was the big Mario game for GameCube.
Okay.
Let's see.
Unfortunate.
Mario games on GameCube, just to see if we're not missing something really wild here.
You know, while you're looking it up, let me just say, apropos of nothing, if you like good Mario games. Some good Mario games that are actually not Mario games are the Spyro games.
Yeah, the Spyro games are great. They're kind of PlayStation's answer to people who would say, oh, well, N64's got Mario, they've got Banjo-Kazooie. You know, what is PS1 got in terms of platformers? And Spyro is kind of their answer to that.
Right, and all three are good.
Yeah, I'm seeing it's a lot of just like Mario sports games.
So
like,
yeah,
your Mario tennises, Mario. There's a Dance Dance Revolution game with Mario, which I think is kind of odd.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. So I guess we got one left.
Yeah, let's hear it. And this is your number one.
This is my number one, and I'm cheating just a little bit because I'm putting a whole series in here.
Oh boy.
The new Super Mario Brothers series. Now some have been better than others.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the one on Wii U is probably the best. They re-released that on the Switch. But my big problem with the new Super Mario Brothers games is that they're way too derivative. It was the kind of thing where it was a nice novelty at first.
Right.
But then it was like, okay, well, what else do you got? What are you gonna do to innovate?
See, I would actually say that the reason I don't love them is that maybe they're not derivative enough. Like, I feel like it was like, hey, this is a remake of the original Super Mario Brothers. We are gonna bring that original game that you love, and we're gonna almost like colorizing an old movie or something, which is not something that you would want. But anyway, and I feel like the first level feels like, oh, okay, this is like a new, and then it becomes a hodgepodge of it's a little bit of 3, it's a little bit of Mario World. It's just kind of nothing and everything all at once.
But you're saying exactly why I don't like them, because again,
I agree. I don't like that either.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, and the thing that gets me is every once in a while you will get thrown one level that's like, oh wow, this is really good.
Right.
And you'll be like, is there any more of this? It's like, no, that was just one level. Like, there's a level in the Wii U version that is like a Van Gogh style level, where like the background is like a Van Gogh painting. It's like set at night, and it's this really great. It's got this really great like look to it. And it's like, wow, is this like all? Are there gonna be more levels like this in this game? It's like, no, we gave you one.
Right.
And it's like then we're back to the regular. And I think the art style I do not like. I think the art style is very, it looks very budget. It looks very lazy.
Mm.
It feels like they could have either done better 3D graphics, or they could have gone back to the drawing board and done pixel art that you would have never been able to do back then, but like would have been so easy to do now. Like, you could have made like really crisp, really great looking, like almost like, You remember when they did Mega Man 9 and 10?
I do. I didn't play them, but I know what you're talking about.
And they did it. They did them in the NES style. And like where it looked like an NES. And they were just really solid games. They were really well reviewed. I wish they had kind of done that with Mario, where it's like, hey, we're just going to continue making this line of 2D Mario games.
What was to say, how would you do if you were tasked with, okay, making a modern, a contemporary 2D side scroller Mario? How would you do that?
I would basically do what the Sonic Mania team did for Sonic, which was basically what they did for Sonic with Sonic Mania was they souped up the 16-bit graphics just a little bit. Like, it still looks like it could be 16-bit Sonic, but kind of like if they made a 2D Sonic on like Sega Saturn, where it's like you have the benefit of CD quality audio. You could make the pixels like a little crisper. You could put more detail in them. You weren't limited by just, you know, the Genesis hardware. I would have liked to see something similar with Mario, where almost like what they did with Mario All-Stars, where, yeah, hey, we're going to take these games that were on NES that you loved, and we're going to bring them up to contemporary taste and do like pixel art style that we can do now because we're working with 16-bit hardware. I would like them to go and do a Mario game that's in that Super Nintendo style, but obviously now you could do more with it.
Right, right. Well, you do see, you know, smaller games, you know, like Steam games or like PlayStation Network games.
Oh, yeah.
That are side scrollers, and they've done incredible things. There was a game that I played last year. I don't remember it. It's an insane name. It starts with a V, but it's basically like, it's like a combination of Contra, but like magic involved. And it's really, they tend to be very hard, but I was like, wow, that's one of the best side scrollers I've ever played.
Yeah.
What the fuck was the name of it? It was like, I want to say Valkyrie, but it's not that. It's like some made up mumbo jumbo word. But
yeah, we see that a lot now, especially on Steam and,
right,
you know,
side scroller is a genre that is valuable.
Well, and when Nintendo or like any other company doesn't make the game that you want, I do like that now more than ever, you'll get a smaller developer being like, well, we'll just make it. We're just not going to call it, you know, what the license is.
Right.
To get around it. Like one of the big ones a couple of years ago, and they just put out a sequel, I think last month, is for a long time, and they're finally putting one out, I think a month from now it's coming out. Nintendo's finally putting out a new Metroid game.
Ah, yeah.
But for a long time, they didn't. So there was a small company who made a game called Axiom Verge, and they just put out a sequel to it. But if you play it, it's basically like, hey, this is a new 2D Metroid game. It's just not called Metroid, and, you know, the sprites are a little different. But, like, if you want a new 2D Metroid, like, this is it. Just like there have been people who've made basically new Castlevania, like 2D Castlevania games.
Right.
They're not called Castlevania.
It's like the big consoles refuse to make a game like that. Like, it's got to be, it can't be a side scroller. We don't do that anymore. We do 3D. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the way like movie studios would like never like make a black and white movie anymore.
Yeah.
By the way, completely not what we're talking about. Do you have a PS5?
I do not. And I kind of don't have any interest in it.
I have tons of interest in it, but I'm priced out. I'm completely priced out of it.
That's so one of the reasons I'm not interested in it.
Well, I understand that. But I'm going to, you know, years down the line, you know, 2-3 years from now, I'll have a lot of fun games to catch up on.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Because one, you're right, it's pricing people out. There's not a big supply. And honestly, there's really no exclusive games that I would want for it. There's nothing that, there aren't like those 2-3 games right now where it's like, oh man, I really have an itch to play these. Like, I got to get a PS5.
Well, they just put out all those trailers, like the new Spider-Man 2.
In 2-3 years, I'm going to love it.
Exactly.
like I bought a PS4 basically a year ago, and I'm fine with that because I'm just catching up on, you know, all the game. I caught up on the Spider-Man that was on PS4. Right. I caught up on, you know, the Yakuza series. Like, I'm fine with just waiting.
Right. I actually want to say that I got back into gaming after years of not being in it because a friend of hours, Andrew DiLorenzo sold me his PlayStation 4 for like $100.
Oh, wow.
He like gave it to me. And he recently passed away, and he was an awesome person. Yeah. And we the last conversation I had with him was about him coming on the show, which sadly never happened. But I've got to dedicate this episode to him because he got me back into gaming, and he basically gave me that system.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean,
yeah,
because basically, I don't know how much. I mean, it's public knowledge, so we could probably talk right about it. But he was terminally ill.
Yeah.
But he didn't tell anyone. It wasn't like a big thing, or like he didn't want to make a big deal out of it. So it was sort of a very private thing. He wasn't on social media for a long time. Yeah. And then very recently he popped back up on social media. And I actually had the thought I should reach out to him and see, like, you know, maybe hang out now that the world's opening back up, blah, blah, blah. And sadly that, you know, that's not going to happen now. But like, I was good friends with him all throughout college because we worked at the radio station together.
Yeah, he was a very funny, creative guy.
And yeah, if anyone knows anything about him, like, I don't know if I told you a story. I met him. You know when you meet someone before you actually meet them?
Yeah.
Like, I met him in 2007 when I joined college and joined the radio station. But I actually met him, unbeknownst to me, in 2003 when we both had summer school together.
Secret Origins.
Yeah, exactly. At St. Peter's High School. And we had an Italian class and a math class together. And this Italian summer school class was complete bullshit. Like, we did absolutely nothing. She was like a young teacher. She didn't really care. She was basically like, oh, show up and like, you know, whatever. Like, we would watch TV. And because we would just like sit around and watch Jerry Springer, Andrew was like, hey, do you mind if I bring in like some VHS tapes and we just, you know, we'll watch stuff. And she was like, yeah, that's fine. And one day he brought in a bag of VHS tapes. And on all these VHS tapes were recordings of local commercials, like, yeah, a whole bunch of like Petland discounts and like Star Registry, Perillo Tours, like all your favorite midday classics. And it was like, and then like looking back when I realized it was him at the radio station, I was like, oh, you're that kid that had like the VHS tapes of all the commercials. And then once you get to know a little more about Andrew, it's like, oh, that actually made all the sense in the world.
When he passed away, I said to my mother, hey, do you remember when I graduated, my friend who was wearing a fake mustache at the graduation?
Yeah.
That's the guy who passed away. He loved a fake mustache. Anyway, he was a cool guy. Vin, thank you so much for being here.
No, it was my pleasure.
Fuck Mario 2. I think there's something we could all agree on. It's fuck Mario 2. No, this is PCMC. We are a podcast that is all about pop culture ephemera. We talk about video games and comics and toys and books and film theories.
We're supported by viewers by you and viewers like you and you a grant from the Helena Rubinstein Foundation.
No, Helena Rubinstein's actually given us nothing. So she's dead in my eyes. We come out every Wednesday. If you like what you hear, subscribe, give us a 5-star review, give us a nice little review ski, share us with your friends. Vin, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
We end the episode by saying, it's-a me, Gobaiwai!